action to rebuild the city. And if most of the streets still now blocked by piles of rubble, so if the coalition, the United States and its allies, do not put an effort to rebuild the city they destroyed, they we're gonna risk a situation when chaos will come back again. I mean, ISIS prey on situations like this, on people's dispersion, and I'm afraid that if there's no plan for what's next, we won't have stability for long in those
Marwan
areas.
Marwan Hisham, I want to thank you for being with us. We're going to do part two and put it online as a web exclusive. And Molly Crabapple, their new book, Brothers of the Gun, A Memoir of the Syrian War. I'm Amy Goodman with Noreen Sheikh. Thanks so much.
Join KBOO Community Radio as we celebrate the life of longtime KBOO DJ and volunteer Miguel Bustamante on Saturday, May 12th from 5 to 11 p.m. at the Woodland Multicultural Impact Collective Space in Portland. Miguel passed away in February of this year, and we come together to celebrate four decades of Spanish language radio with music, memories, and dance, as well as light food and refreshments. Again, that's a celebration of the life of Miguel Bustamante, the founder of the long-running KBOO program La Voz de la Comunidad, on Saturday, May 12th from 5 to 11 p.m. at the Woodlawn Multicultural Impact Collective Space, located at 1425 Northeast Deakum Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The Personnel Committee will meet on the second Monday of each month at 6 p.m.
This is Ursula K. Le Guin, and you are listening to KBOO, the cheerful voice of social conscience, KBOO Portland.
This is KBOO Portland. The time is 8:02 a.m., and you are listening to Native Voices from the Edge.
Hey, hey, hey. Oh, oh, oh. Whoa. We are all one people, and we have to reunite. I say, better gather up our warriors, 'cause tonight is the big fight. Hey, 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 hey.
I'm Amory Shack.
And I'm Carrie Waters. Today we are joined by a rock star group of folks called the Future Generations Collaborative. They work in the realm of health and wellness within the Portland urban Native community, specifically focused on prevention of drug and alcohol impacted pregnancies. We're going to hear about a recent event that they hosted, the Collective Impact Summit, last week. But first, we're going to just chat about how things are going this week. How are things going? We are joined, Amory and myself are joined by Jalene Joseph from the Native Wellness Institute, Shar Cobb from our Elders and Natural Helpers, and William Miller, Policy Coordinator with the Future Generations Collaborative. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So before we jump into our conversation about FGC, we realized that it is that most wonderful time of the year, voting season. Now we've got some passionate folks in this room who are passionate about civic engagement, voting, making your voice heard. So what's coming up this next week?
Yeah, so voting season is upon us. Ballots are due for the May primary, May 15th, next Tuesday. If you've not received your ballot in the mail and you know that you're a registered voter, you should check your mail, first of all. Second of all, you should go down to the elections office if you've not received your ballot. They can help you out and reprint your ballot so you can fill that out and turn that back in. It's very critical to make sure you turn out to vote this election season. There's some really great candidates on the ballot. There's important measures on the ballot. And it's important for all of us to make sure we cast our vote and be civically engaged. So ballots are due May 15th, next Tuesday. The Native American Youth and Family Center on Monday from 12 to 1 is hosting a ballot party, is what we're calling it. And it's a time for folks to come and gain nonpartisan information about candidates running and more information about the measures and an opportunity for folks to fill out their ballots. But like I said, if you don't have your ballots and they're not in your mailbox, make sure you go down to your local elections office and obtain a copy of that ballot.
Agreed. And in addition to voting season, we are also in the thick of budget season, party time. So there are plenty of community forums that have happened already. Very lively, lots of passionate folks turning out to advocate for programs that are going to be cut or that are proposed to be cut within the mayor's budget that was recently released. But I know there are a lot of things that people are excited about as well. I know there's a budget hearing coming up today at Portland City Hall this evening at, I believe, 6:30 p.m. I know there's going to be a rally that our friends from Opal Environmental Justice Oregon are hosting on the Youth Pass, which had been fully funded this last year, I believe for the first time throughout all school districts in Portland. In the past, they had only funded Portland Public Schools, which left our schools out in East Portland feeling that brunt of already living in transit-deficient areas. So they funded Rose Park Rose and David Douglas School Districts. And those are now not included in the budget today. So if you care about climate, if you care about our youth being able to get around to jobs and school, I know they're going to be hosting a rally this afternoon at 4:30 p.m. immediately in front of City Hall, just before the hearing this evening. So that's enough on budget and voting season for right now. We'll put a pin in that and welcome our guests. So I will just go ahead and hand it off to these lovely people to go ahead and introduce themselves, share a bit about Future Generations Collaborative, and then we'll move into some questions.
Awesome. Thank you. You two are really good at this. You're really good hosts. And thank you for having us. So my name is Jillian Joseph, and I am the executive director of a nonprofit organization called the Native Wellness Institute, and we are one of the partners within the Future Generations Collaborative. And before we get started, we wanted to just do a land acknowledgement and acknowledge the traditional territories of the many nations that claim this area. Of course, because of our river systems, the many bands of the Confederate Tribes of Grand Ronde, the bands of the Confederate Tribes of Warm Springs, even the Confederate Tribes of Siletz, Chehalis, Cowlitz, many people claim this territory. So we just want to acknowledge them and the land that we live and work and play on every day. And I'm also going to share just a little bit about why the FGC exists. And I'm going to take it way back to settler colonialism, because that's really the beginning point. And why that's important is because there's a new narrative finally, and albeit slowly, starting to change around public health, and where public health is finally recognizing the impacts of racism or white superiority on many of the health determinants that we see today. And so it's important to recognize settler colonialism in terms of the FGC. So, and why that's important is because what settler colonialism did was label our people as savage, and that's even still evident today in the U.S. Declaration of Independence, where we are, you know, labeled as merciless Indian savages. And why that's important is because that label paved the way for genocide. It paved the way for dehumanization, right? And dehumanization was carried out through genocide and biological warfare, chemical warfare, you know, through alcohol. And then when those didn't work, then, you know, the boarding school era came in, where the theme, if you will, quotations, my hands are in quotations, for the theme was, you know, kill the Indian, save the man. And that was from General Pratt. And what that meant was our people couldn't do anything, that we couldn't speak our language, we couldn't practice our value systems. So that was beaten out of us. And so what that did, when that didn't work, then other forms of erasure, right, occurred. Whether it was erasing us from, or when we couldn't be erased from the land, we were then erased from the history books. So nobody learned about us in school, except about, you know, the one day at Thanksgiving when we came together with the pilgrims and, you know. So because we're erased from books and really the true history isn't taught, then people often don't even realize that we still exist. I mean, even now in 2018. And so that erasure continued, and we're erased from society by being placed on reservations, and then were further erased from society by, you know, disenfranchised and, you know, putting our people in prisons and behind bars, and were erased on data forms and were just marked as an other. Like, all these things are important to understand why we have the Future Generations Collaborative today. It's because of the what I'm talking about, our, you know, historical and intergenerational trauma. And that pain and hurt that exists from our experience, our ancestors' experience, you know, trickling down to our experience today, causes pain and hurt. And we have one of our natural helpers here, Shar, who's just going to talk a little bit more about what that pain and hurt does to our people and why the FGC formed.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Charlotte Badcob. I'm with the Oglala Sioux Tribe and a natural helper with the Future Generations Collaboration. The Future Generations Collaboration strives to reduce, the reason why FGC was formed was the Future Generation strives to reduce substance-affected pregnancies in the Portland Native community, and we do this in a number of ways. One of the ways that we bring awareness to FASD, FASD is fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. And one of the ways that we bring awareness to this is by educating about the disorder, about fetal alcohol spectrum disorder and its impact on children and families. And also teaching about the effects of historical and intergenerational trauma and providing opportunities for healing, advocating for systems and policy change and building capacity at the individual, family, community, and organizational level. And one of the reasons why we're doing it is because we care. And why we care is because drinking alcohol while pregnant, prenatal exposure, can cause lifelong behavioral, physical, and intellectual challenges, resulting in difficulties in learning, thinking, judgment, emotional development, and self-regulation. social relationships, that can affect our social relationships in the school settings, job settings, and in our relationships, or in our everyday relationships. And where did it come from? Historical and intergenerational trauma have produced hurt and pain resulted in self-medicating and addictive behaviors. And some of our focus is on our strength. What we focus on are our strengths, and we look at FASD as a gift because people impacted have many lessons to teach us. And when a mother drinks, it's not about harming her baby. It's more likely she's dealing with her pain from the effects of intergenerational trauma. Some of the things that we found will help is frequent and positive non-judgmental support that is delivered with compassion and understanding. Finding people's strengths and building on them through activities that move them forward. So the FGC has given the natural helpers and the elders many tools in which that we could use in our communities to bring awareness of FASD and its impacts on Indian country. And not only does it impact Indian country, it impacts the world around us. Whenever we are diagnosed with FASD, we're put into a category where we're not in there with the, you know, the learning with the regular or with people who don't have FASD. And some of the other things that we find is finding people's strengths and building on them through activities that move them forward, programming that understands the impacts of FASD and it's responsive and structured for predictability, frequency of contact, and sustainable activities that build relationship. And anybody in our communities can help by being supportive as a friend, or being supportive as a community, or being supportive as a professional. So through the FASD, what it has done for me is it has opened up knowledge, things that aren't taught in school that I didn't know about FASD. And, you know, and part of it is knowing where that comes from. And a lot of us don't know about it. But the Future Generations Collaboration was formed to bring awareness. And we have a lot of partners in the community, Multnomah County, the Native Wellness Institute, NAYA Family Center, NARA, and the county, OHSU, many others that are supportive to the Future Generations Collaboration. Thank you.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much for giving us that overview of historical trauma, these interconnected systems of oppression that have led to this symptom of alcoholism that has been prevalent in our community as a tactic against us, to erase us. We're going to shift gears a bit into a conversation about this Collective Impact Summit that happened recently with Future Generations Collaborative. I first started hearing about this concept of collective impact maybe 5 years ago or so. And it's been really, really an important idea of how to frame our work, both in my realm of work, and I'm excited to hear about what that looks like within the Future Generations Collaborative. Because so often, you know, in our community, as we're trying to address issues, sometimes we find that we're inadvertently duplicating work or, you know, not being as effective as we could be. So my understanding is that there are five elements of collective impact. There are typically a backbone organization associated with an initiative, a common agenda, so we have to have something that we're all convening around to address together. We have to have shared goals and shared metrics as to how we achieve those goals, mutually reinforcing activities so that we're not duplicating our work, shared communications, and that appears to be it. So maybe we can flesh those out over our next few minutes together. So I think I'll go ahead and hand it off to Will.
Yeah, thanks, Carrie. So we only have a few minutes to talk about collective impact when we could take a few hours. But my name is William Miller. I serve as the Future Generations Collaborative Policy Coordinator, and I'm housed at the Native American Youth and Family Center. Thank you for having me today. So a few weeks ago now, what? No, not a few weeks ago, a couple weeks now, on the 30th of April, last week, actually. Everything blends nowadays. Every day blends. I'm sure many of you listening can attest to that. But on the 30th, the Future Generations Collaborative held our Collective Impact Summit at OHSU. And we brought together many partners from around the state, all throughout Oregon and in Washington even, to build upon this idea of collective impact and the prevention and intervention of substance-exposed pregnancies related to fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. So the key takeaways of the Collective Impact Summit was we wanted folks to know that Indigenous people in the Tri-County region are disproportionately affected by health inequities, and they're less likely to be substance users. But due to intersections of historical and contemporary traumas, folks are at higher risk of addictions and higher risk of use. We also wanted folks to know Indigenous people have generations of expertise to share with health systems and how to address the root causes of health inequities. We wanted them to take away that this includes the prevention of substance-exposed pregnancies. And by being cooperative with a strengths-based approach, both Indigenous values, we have the opportunity to develop and build on current strategies in new ways. And so that was the overview and the takeaways of the Collective Impact Summit. And we had folks from all across Oregon, like I said, tribal partners, folks in mental health and addiction services, and folks in Washington, Lummi Nation attended, and to build upon this shared understanding of how do we to lift up this work as a collective body in our community, and do good work around this in the current systems and framework that we are operating within. So that falls within our common agenda, one of the frameworks of collective impact. The second stanza of collective impact is common progress measures, so shared metrics, true outcomes. Many folks who attended the Impact Summit, there were many different moving parts of the summit throughout the day, so anyone listening can attest that, and who attended can attest that there was a lot that happened that day. But many folks walked away from that event knowing that true healing needed to happen in their heart and in their community. And as Jalene always mentions, and I'm giving Jalene credit here because she always mentions that healing is the answer to everything. And so that was really a big foundation of the Impact Summit, was that we needed to acknowledge that healing is important in this work, that historical trauma is still relevant and is still alive and very real in our community and throughout Indian country. We worked through many different activities. We participated in an activity called the Root Cause Analysis, which analyzes the different impacts of ways that we could prevent fetal alcohol spectrum disorder and risk factors that increase areas of fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. And then we, on the flip side of that, had a conversation about what does this look like over the generation, over intergenerational. So how do you prevent fetal alcohol spectrum disorder over a generation, what are some things that we can do and steps that we can do to take as a community to prevent that? And what are some risk factors through the generation that increase fetal alcohol spectrum disorder? And then we transitioned to talk about data. All of us love data. and that was... And we decolonized, we indigenized our approach to introducing the data to the folks attending. And that was really an eye-opener working through the planning of this process. The data was fascinating. And we shifted there to talk about the life course approach and how do we approach fetal alcohol spectrum disorder from infant to elder, and how do we apply this concept of prevention and intervention and lift our community up toward a healing approach throughout our lives. Do y'all have anything to add?
Well, this is Jolene again. That was great. That was great, Will. So an interesting part of collective impact is, one, getting on the same page and everybody understanding what is collective impact. So that was the other piece of the collective impact, was like getting on that same page. And then prior to that, getting on the same page takes a relationship building and trust building. And so the Future Generations Collaborative, the FGC, has been around for nearly 8 years already. Mm. And I came into the scene about a year and a half into the process. Excuse me. But we spend a lot of time on relationship building and trust building. And we've been talking about, you know, coming from a positive place or a strength-based place. And our culture gives us proof that our people were strength-based people, mm-hmm. that our people were positive thinkers. And the proof is, and the evidence is in our language, it's in our songs, it's in our ceremonies. But because of historical and intergenerational trauma, chronic negativity is an outcome of that. So when we have chronic negativity, then many of our people come from a deficit-based place. Mm-hmm. And so part of what healing does and part of what relationship building and trust building does is help us to break through that. So even in that sense, we're trying to decolonize. And when we decolonize, that means we're trying to get closer to the way that our ancestors thought, because the way we think then informs the way we behave. So when we decolonize, we need to fill that up, and we fill that up with indigenizing. So how did our ancestors do things? And so one of the beautiful things about this process and the collective impact model that we're trying to follow is it's being led by people who believe in decolonization, and it's led by people who believe in embracing the values that our ancestors lived by, so that we can indigenize our processes, whether it's indigenizing the way we collect the data or analyze the data or present the data. And it's embraced by the tribal and non-tribal people that are at the table with the FGC. So that's like critical. And so we're dropping these different terms here on the radio, and maybe some people that are in their car or sitting at their desk at work will say, settler colonialism, I'm going to Google that. Or, collective impact, I'm going to Google that. Mm-hmm. Decolonization, I'm going to Google that. indigenization, I'm going to Google that. So we want people to learn more, because we're just scratching the surface right here. So that relationship building and trust building is key, and we really give gratitude towards our partners at Multnomah County who fund a great deal of our work. And the I call it the woke, here I got my quotations up on my fingers again, the woke people within the system who are working in a colonized system, who see the impacts of racism or white superiority and white dominance play out in systems, and who are working within that system to help bring awareness. And then gratitude to our partners as well, the tribal and non-tribal partners, who are doing their work too, their personal healing work that contributes to the organizational healing, that contributes to the community healing. So I just kind of wanted to interject that.
Yeah, thank you, Jillian, for adding those comments. I do want to mention another piece of the Impact Summit. We had an opportunity to pause the summit and participate in a unique ceremony with the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde, and we formalized a partnership summit. So before the Collective Impact Summit, we held a partnership summit in September, and what came of that was more people coming to the table to do this work in collaboration with the Future Generations Collaborative. And the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde was one of those folks that we were able to bring to the table and wanted to come to the table to lift this work up. And we presented to their Health and Wellness Committee back in January, and they saw that it was a true inherent need that we formalize a partnership between the Future Generations Collaborative and the Health and Wellness Committee with the tribe. And so during the middle of the Collective Impact Summit, nearly 100 attendees were able to witness a ceremony of how we formalize a partnership. And so that story on how that came to be is actually kind of funny, because when that partnership started to happen, this language of a memorandum of understanding happened. And I'm gonna talk about this decolonization theory. That's not a theory, it's an actual thing. But but so this idea of a memorandum of understanding really kind of worried some folks. And so that's to put it lightly, but so it worried folks. And you know, Jalene and other partners in the FGC, Susie is our education mode. We sat back and talked about how, as a Future Generations Collaborative, where we seek to decolonize our systems and operate from an indigenized mode, can we approach this partnership in that fashion? And so instead of a formal memorandum of understanding, we chose to indigenize that process and move forward with a ceremony in the way in which our people would go about doing it. And so the folks attending who may or may not have ever witnessed a ceremony before were able to witness that. And that was really remarkable. And I was very happy with folks being able to witness that ceremony and that partnership come to light.
Nice. And I think that really explains the work that we do. Like, when we look at indigenizing our work, it is like a ceremony, yeah. Right? Because we have not only the responsibility, but we have the opportunity to help our people to heal. And healing is the answer to trauma. And healing is the answer to fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. So over the years, we have really honed in and develop this model that the Future Generations Collaborative uses. And so Will alluded to a couple of our modes. So we have four modes of our work. So policy, Will leads the policy piece. The Native Wellness Institute, we have a team of people that helps with the community engagement piece. We have Susie Kirshner, who leads the education piece. And then we have a research and evaluation piece. So those four modes help move the work forward. And so the policy piece is housed at NAIA, as Will said. And we, he can speak to his work better. I can speak to the other three modes real briefly. Within the four modes, we have elders and natural helpers. So Shar is here representing that arm of the work, and they kind of intersect in all of the four modes. The elders and natural helpers are community members that we've trained, starting back in 2013, to help be the eyes and the ears in the community, but also help with the policy work, help with the engagement work, help with the education work, and help with the evaluation and research work. And so they went through training, 90 hours of training to become certified community health workers. They continue their learning They continue to assist with the work. So it's a really beautiful model, and how we try to look at systems in terms of individuals, right? And then how individuals impact their family, and then how the family impacts the community. And then, of course, we look at systems in terms of organization systems, like NEA and NARA, for example, like Multnomah County Health Department, as an example. And so that the engagement piece started out by doing community forums where we heard from the community that, yes, alcohol is a problem in our community. They wanted to learn more about FASD. Yes, they felt FASD is a part of our community, fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, and that they wanted to learn more about historical and intergenerational trauma and wanted more opportunities for healing. And so really that's what the engagement piece really follows, that input from the community, where over or about 100 people were participating in these community forums that gave us that feedback. And then the education piece strives to teach people, whether it's providers within our Native serving organizations or providers outside that outside the Native serving organizations that serve our population, to teach them about FASD and to teach them, you know, what it is, not only how to prevent it, but how to better serve our people that are living with an FASD. And so FASD has really changed over the years. You know, when we think back to the 80s, some of you might not remember, but like back in the 80s, like we used to call it FAS, fetal alcohol syndrome. And then that kind of changed to FAE, fetal alcohol effect. And then as we continue to learn more and more about it, then it finally changed to what we call it today, FASD, fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, because it's a spectrum. And way back in the 80s, as an example, we used to only focus on like the morphology, like the way people looked, if their eyes were a certain way or whatever, oh, they have FAS. But now through time and research, we're finding that there's many other things that happen and the way people are impacted. And so that's why it's on a spectrum. And what this process has done is because of the lack of diagnostic centers, many people are self-identified. And many people, when we do the community engagement and the community education pieces and they learn about FASD, you know, we've had countless people say, oh my gosh, I think I'm somewhere on the spectrum. And so that has been really good. And we've had people say, wow, for the first time, I finally understand myself. And for the first time, I feel understood by others. So those are like really powerful things. And so that's part of the beauty and the ceremony that the FGC brings to the community is awareness. And then tools, you know, tools for self-regulation, tools to learn how to live with an FASD. And then, of course, tools to help our own healing and community's healing as a way to prevent FASD.
I was talking with, thank you, Jillian, by the way. I was talking with Susie on the way into the studio this morning, and she wishes she could be here, but I'm confident that she's listening right now. And she would never forgive me if I didn't mention that having an FASD is a gift in and of itself. She did mention that this morning. There's a lot of teachings that are had within that. So along with the modes, I'll speak to the policy mode very briefly, but essentially the work that I do I think is complicated but also very straightforward. is I help bring the policy and systems change expert knowledge and expertise to the table within the Future Generations Collaborative, so, and support the other modes in doing that work. And so all of the modes, the evaluation, engagement, education, and policy, we operate on a flattened model. It's no one's above each other, which is an incredible model to operate by. We do have a project manager, Heather Heater, who is works for the Multnomah County Health Department. And our work is also supported by Olivia Walker, who's a senior policy analyst with the Multnomah County Health Department as well. And so we do have an incredible team to support our work and make great change happen. But I seem to think, and others may think the same as well, that policy is very much influenced by the work that happens within the collaborative. So if something's happening and they're like, this needs to change, or let's look in how this law can change, that's when I stand on the table and jump up and down and get really excited. But I work with local elected officials, and I'm in Salem often. That's my second home. But so I work in collaboration with all the other modes and change makers, policy agents, and folks who have the ability to make good, positive change in our community. So
that's great. I wanted to get back to something that you all mentioned. So Char, you were trained as a community health worker. Can you share a bit about what a community health worker is?
Well, we were trained as community health worker, which kind of really enforced us as being natural helpers. Some of the work that we were doing in the community to begin with. But being community health worker, which I'm really thankful I was a participant in, because they provided cultural specific services mm-hmm. that we can provide to our community. And to me, community health worker is a person who operates in a variety of different, we're there to as a support in the community, you know, if someone is needing support with bringing a new life into the world, you know, we have natural helpers who have that skill to be able to be there for them and help them through that time and in case they have any difficulties. So I'm very thankful to be a part of the future generations and to have gone through the trainings that were provided to by the county.
That's great. Yeah, this term has been popping up over the last few years, at least, you know, in my world. I wasn't aware of what a community health worker is. And so seeing some of our folks at NAIA who are community health workers that are helping to reconnect our communities to traditional plants mm-hmm. for healing through teas and mm-hmm. Bringing awareness to, you know, our sugary drink epidemic, not in a blaming way, but in a way that promotes our traditional medicines in place of that, has been really encouraging and has, you know, brought folks back to learning about our traditional ways of healing, our traditional ecological knowledge that has been interrupted through colonization over the past 500 plus years. It's been really profound, and it's, you know, really great to have folks who can help navigate the healthcare system, because, you know, it's not set up for us to, you know, succeed within or to understand easily. So it's really fabulous that we have folks who are trained up who can help navigate these interconnected systems that impact mm-hmm. our communities so much. And I'm also reminded of, you know, the need for more mm-hmm. funding for community health workers. Mm-hmm. Is there anything in the works? I know we just closed out our short legislative session a couple months back, but looking ahead, I know there's legislative days coming up this mm-hmm. month, right? Mm-hmm. Could you say a bit about that?
Talk about legislative days, or talk about like any sort
funding
of legislation?
I'll talk about our need for money after.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm happy to talk about legislative days. So legislative days are May 21st through 23rd in Salem. And that's a time for folks to legislators to be in Salem, but also some committees and task forces will meet and start working on just some groundwork prior to session. The long session, the 2019 legislative session, will start in January. But as far as community health worker legislation, there's been conversations that I've been part of in the past couple months about traditional health workers bill being reintroduced. It was introduced, and there was a lot of effort put behind it. If I remember correctly, through Representative Kenny Geyer's office, to expand the swath of community health workers within the state, and more funding would, from my understanding, be allotted to that legislation. So there are folks that are gearing up to push that again, and I'm excited to jump on that as well.
And I think one of the interesting things about the Future Generations Collaborative is we're really good at identifying challenges and really good at finding solutions to those challenges. So in our work, we're very solution-oriented, in addition to being very strength-based and positive-based, which ultimately is culture-based. So, for example, we have a grants committee that was identified several years ago to look at what are grant opportunities that we could apply for. And we're not an organization, we're a collaborative. So we exist with many different organizations coming together to address FASD through a collective impact model. So there's some challenges there about going after funding because a lot of funding agencies don't fund collaboratives, they only fund an agency. And so we've come up with some challenges and come up with some solutions to that. So sometimes our individual agencies will apply on behalf of the collaborative. We're seeking funding for different things. And one of them is like to fund the elders and natural helpers. So they started out as community volunteers. And because of the voice and the expertise that they bring to the table, we wanted to compensate them financially. So we live in a world where, you know, we're a money-based society. And so we wanted to respect their time, respect their expertise that they brought. And so we started paying them for their time. You know, sometimes they're riding a bus for 2 hours to get to an event or to a meeting, or we want to respect their time. So we're always looking for funding for the stipends that we give the elders and natural helpers. And of course, we're always looking for funding for our own sustainability as a collaborative. Mm-hmm. So our grant committee meets to brainstorm those. We have partnerships with Portland State University. There are some of their capstone classes that help us identify and write grants. So we have like many grants already drafted that we can respond to when grant announcements come up. So if there's any listeners out there that, you know, have that rich uncle or whatever, that we'll take it and put it to good use. Always got to put that plug out there.
Thank you.
Yeah, so I do want to backpedal just a tad. Just really quick back to the Collective Impact Summit. One thing I did miss was the witness ceremony. So I wanted to talk about that and share Mary Lou's reflections with you all. So the witness ceremony is, we asked two non-Native folks at the very beginning of the Collective Impact Summit to observe, witness, listen, take notes, and then report back at the end of the day their findings with the larger body. And so we asked two folks, and this is one of the reflections from Mary Lou Correa, who works with the Oregon Health Equity Alliance. So Mary Lou said, and she said that I can share these today. So thank you, Mary Lou. A comfortable din, a sea of familiar and unfamiliar faces. A gentle tone calls us in. This land is of those before us. A morning prayer in a voice that resonates with the power of youth. A drum dressed in salmon blessed us. A grounding in family. Mamas and aunties and babies and babes and grandmas. A partner is reminded the knowledge is out there, among many, not just one. We are reminded settler colonialism is dehumanizing, genocidal, and includes biological and chemical warfare. Failed genocide led to systematic efforts to erase the indigenous, but everything will always come back to the balance. Build, nurture, integrate, cultivate. A call out. What are you doing to decolonize your work and invite indigenous communities in? Good news, there are many opportunities. From lessons learned and shared, a circle emerged, a continuum of many connections, a circle of perfection, a cycling and recycling of approaches. Responsibility to self and awareness of the seven before, behind, and next. This murmuration reflects increasing recognition of our interrelatedness. We are asked, don't be our voyeur. See something special and be part of it. The answer to trauma is healing. Engaging others creates the space within ourselves to heal. What's unique about collective impact is everyone's role is rooted in their strength as we move toward a shared goal. How? Bring stories to the front. Bring meaning to the front. Return to ourselves through voice, touch, repetition, surprise. Respond to your intuition and respond to the world around you. Connect strength to culture. Of babies of FASD and adults of FASD. Value the strengths people bring. Challenge our internal structures to offer this support. You know, other people's frustrations are just other people's frustrations. Communication is key. What does it mean to do adaptive management? It's so important. Why is it so hard? Trust community voices, the teachers in our lives. No partnership can yield real possibility when you root in relationship, when you are open to relationship. Wake up for the data. Wake up to the data. Create the bridges between ancestral and contemporary ways of knowing. Your analysis is better when community is engaged. Your analysis is better when community is engaged. Stories frame the data, and the stories tell us. Relationships are everything. To place, to purpose, work, talent, to significant people. To fill in the gaps, heads bowed toward one another, ears and hearts open, exploring roots, root cause, analysis. Our electeds too. Later, another chance for collaboration. We sit, kneel to engage, excite, inspire, as the voices, language, and crafts of healing surround us. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary Lou, for writing that. That was amazing.
It was.
Yeah.
We are getting close to the top of the hour, so I would love to ask the question to you all. What are some ways for listeners to be involved, or how can people get plugged into this important conversation, whether it's through the Future Generations Collaborative or anything else that was mentioned today?
One of the ways that I tell people that they can become involved whenever they ask me is that we have a Future Generations page on Facebook. Everyone nowadays is on Facebook, so of course we have a page. But to look on that and to look for our events, because we would love to have them in this healing process.
And we do have a website that's launching soon.
Oh,
so we're still ironing out the last few kinks. We were hoping that we could announce it today, but it is coming, so be watching for that. And then I think there's like personal ways that people can get involved, and I mentioned some already, like Googling some of these terms and learning more about some of these terms that we're talking about today. And you know, everyone needs healing. It's not just brown and black people that need healing. Like, white people need healing too. And so when we look at the intersection of racism on health disparities and health inequities, which I talked about in the beginning, like that narrative is finally starting to change within public and community health systems. If white people healed from white superiority and white dominance, we wouldn't have racism, and it would greatly impact health inequities and health disparities. So if you're out there, as a white person or however you identify, I would like take a deeper look into that. And that's one way that you can get involved in this work. And then our personal healing journeys is just that, it's personal and it looks different for every person. So if you're uncertain about even what that means, like learn more, talk to people, read books, and whatever resonates with you to move forward in a good way, like do that. That's another way that you can get involved. Another way to get involved is to learn more about fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. You know, look at your own life, look at the people in your families, in your circles of friends. Like FASD is everywhere. It's not just the homeless person sitting at the bus stop all day. It's people that work in corporate America are impacted. It's people in the healthcare system that are impacted. Like people everywhere are impacted, and most often they're not aware of that, right? So learning more about fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, learning more about ways to prevent it, and then learning more about how to better serve those living with an FASD. And sometimes that's ourselves, right? So there's just a few ways to get involved.
Yeah, and one little tidbit for those listening. Something that was surprising when I started working in this arena was that men are also part of the problem, if you will, and solution. That men contribute to fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. So it's not just the woman or the mother consuming alcohol during pregnancy. There's studies that show that men who consume alcohol and substances also can contribute to that as well. But I think in another way to get engaged is the Future Generations Collaborative has a monthly meeting, and I know all of you listening are going to want to attend after this. Or you can have Jalene's phone number. It's 5. Just kidding. But it's our monthly meetings are the first Friday of every month at the Native American Youth and Family Center, and they start at 9 and end at 9 to 1 p.m. And there's always good food. And that's an opportunity for you to just come and listen to how our process works and talk to the folks involved in the process, our elders and natural helpers, the four modes, and our partners at the table to see how this work is moving forward and how you can best plug yourselves in, because we want to build on your strengths. We want to capitalize on what you're good at and make sure that and also provide an opportunity for you to learn and heal, because as Jalene has said and continues to say, healing is the key to everything. So I encourage all of you listening to attend our monthly meetings, the first Fridays of every month at the Native American Youth and Family Center.
And watch out for other upcoming events, our community events, as well as our summits that we have too.
Fantastic. And also along those same lines, I wanted to mention to folks that there was a Indigenous Food Sovereignty and Land Justice event last night. I wasn't able to attend. I was at the Portland Clean Energy Fund kickoff. That's another story for another day. But there's a second part of this series next Wednesday, Food, Agriculture, and Land Justice. We know that all of these issues are interconnected when it comes to healing of our land and people. Mm-hmm. So I'll hand it off to Amory to close us out.
On that note, thank you for listening today. Maybe wherever you are today, think, how can I decolonize my mind? And we'll see you next week.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah.
Hey, hey, hey. Oh, oh, oh. Whoa. We are all one people and we have to reunite. I say better gather up our warriors, cause tonight is the big fight. Hey, 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 hey.
You've been You've just been listening to Native Voices from the Edge. Carrie and Amory will be here every Thursday at 8 o'clock during May for this exciting new program. Coming up at 9, well, about 2 minutes away, Press Watch, Teresa Mitchell's weekly news and commentary program, digging deep into the news you're not supposed to know. At 10, it's Air Cascadia interviews, news, and commentary at Flashpoints at 10:15 with Dennis Bernstein. Coming up at 11 on Between the Covers, author Nancy Huang talks about her poetry collection, Favorite Daughter, a compilation of immigration stories, Chinese radio segments, Google Translate entries, and dictionary remixes. That's Between the Covers at 11. And then at 11:30, Words and Pictures welcomes back its first guest after 15 years. Graphic novelist Craig Thompson talks about his new edition of Carnet de Voyage. Thanks, KBOO members, for your support. Keep informed. Get involved by going to kboo.fm. Click donate to become a member. It's 9 o'clock. This is KBOO Portland. Teresa Mitchell with Press Watch is next.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the NAIA Spring Marketplace on Saturday, May 12th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Native American Youth Association in Portland. Join Native small business vendors and artisans from around the Pacific Northwest as they display their goods, including beadwork, jewelry, pottery, woodwork, and more. Again, that's the NAIA Spring Marketplace on Saturday, May 12th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Native American Youth Association, 5135 Northeast Columbia Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. Today, I want to talk about war, methane,